CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. I welcome Dr. Yukon Wong of the Carnegie Endowment for the International Peace to observe one more time trade between the United States and China. But trade in politics is not the same as adding and subtracting, I learned from Dr. Wong. So we begin with the dispute of these last years, where we're coming from. Yukon, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. Where we're coming from is the Trump administration's tariffs and unhappiness with what was regarded as an imbalance, deficits to do with China exporting and the U.S. importing and not vice versa. You identify in an article for Carnegie that this is a misunderstanding of where deficits come from. What is, if any, connection between deficits and trade? Good evening to you, Doctor.
Well, very simply, a country has a trade deficit if it imports more than it exports, and that's the trade deficit. And there's a general perception, which President Trump emphasized, which said that trade deficits were bad, that they were indicative of a weak economy, and other countries are taking advantage of the United States because the United States has the largest trade deficit overall of any country in the world. And the reality is that trade deficits are not an indicator of whether the economy is doing well or poorly. If you think about it, America has a trade deficit with nearly 100 countries. It's been running a trade deficit every year for 40 straight years. So if it was really a problem, then how come it's so persistent? And then the question is why? Why is it only America, in fact, has been running a trade deficit every year for 40 years? And there are two fundamental reasons. One is that the U.S. dollar is the global currency and is the currency which is used by everybody in the world for trade, for holding as a reserve, for travel purposes, and it's even used by smugglers and trafficketeers because it's so easy to handle and so desirable. So how come those dollars are out there? How do they get out there? Well, they get out there because America runs a trade deficit. It imports more than it exports, and it pays for that difference with dollars. And those dollars are essentially what's being used to drive the global trade economy. So there's nothing wrong with this issue. And in fact, America will continue to run a trade deficit into the future as long as the dollar is a global currency. Now, the other factor that drives the deficit is if a country spends more than it should and doesn't pay for it. And that factor is our budget. As everyone in the United States realizes, we run budget deficits every year. If a country runs a budget deficit every single year, it will have a trade deficit. That's the mirror image of the deficit. You're basically spending beyond your means, and you're borrowing from people, and you pay for people with your dollars as an IOU. So, in fact, China's not the issue. The role of trade deficits in the U.S. is budget deficits, and the dollar is the global currency.
I note that at least what I've read is that the Biden administration has continued many of the policies with China that were said to be a response to the trade imbalance. Is that correct, Dr. Wong?
That's correct. Biden continued what I would call the trade practices of the Trump regime by keeping in place these punitive tariffs on Chinese products. So most of the Chinese exports in the United States bear a tariff anywhere from 10 to 15, 25%, and that's still in place. And the purpose, the original purpose was that this somehow would reduce America's trade deficit. The reality is that America's trade deficit has actually gotten larger over the last several years. So the tariff didn't do any good in terms of addressing the concern that Trump had years ago. But Biden's extended the discussion more. He's moved away from what I call pure trade issues to, as you pointed out, political, humanitarian, human rights issues, and sees the issue with China no longer is about a trade deficit per se. But the fact is, a U.S. democracy, a Chinese authoritarian regime, which system is going to dominate the future? And then if you have this kind of a clash, there's a question then of how do you support this? Do you support this with discussions and dialogue, or do you continue it with kinds of punitive economic measures, and you add to it sanctions, prohibitions on exchanges between citizens and professional associations, more limited diplomatic contacts? And that's closing down of consulates in the various countries. And that's what I call a little bit of a hardline approach. And this, of course, is driving and increasing the tensions. And people refer to a so-called Cold War. So we no longer have what I call a trade war. We have something closer to a Cold War.
Yeah, we'll call it a chili war. Now, Europe doesn't seem to be as bothered. You note that while the U.S. has a 1 to 2% of annual U.S. and foreign investment in China, EU has twice that and doesn't suffer because of that. Is that important to Washington and Brussels, that Europe is doing well and the U.S. is worried?
Well, I think this is going to be increasingly an issue. If you have a U.S.-China trade war or Cold War, it has negative implications to everybody. Everyone's affected by these kinds of tensions because of these tariffs. So you have shortages of commodities, prices are rising. How do you address this? And the question is, can the U.S. Deal with this in regard to its dealings with China? And as I mentioned in my article, I don't think so, because I think the policies on both sides have become harder. And they're harder because there's what I call a great power rivalry. There's a concern about the clash of political systems, the leadership role. But Europe doesn't have some of these concerns. Europe does not try or aspire to be the dominant great power. Europe is much more connected economically with China than the U.S. is. So Europe is the same size as America in terms of economic size, but Europe invests 2 to 3 times as much as American firms in China. So Germany, France, they actually produce a lot of goods in China for export to the rest of the world. America does not do that. So you have this kind of greater economic connectivity between Europe, and you don't have these kinds of great power rivalries and complexities. And there's also the issue of technology. The U.S. is the global technological leader. So we have a battle between leadership and technology between U.S. dominant technological power and a rising China. But if you look at Europe, Europe is not seen as a technological leader as the U.S. is. So Europe is not so sensitive to this question about a technological rivalry. They don't have the Googles or the Amazons or the semiconductors being produced or the high-tech equipments. So they're not sort of like trying to compete with America. But America sees China trying to do so. So you don't have this kind of technological tension. You don't have this kind of great power rivalries. But Europe does share ideological and human rights concerns with the U.S. establishment. And so the issue in the future, can Europe mediate, try to find a what I call more collaborative international relationships to solve some of these issues and to reduce this kind of Cold War atmosphere that's affecting everyone badly?
You come to write it, what is to be done, and I want to ask, what is to be done? Does that include that Europe is a good arbiter for the charges of protectionism, for the charges of intellectual property theft, for the charges of subsidies?
America's approach to this kind of issues of intellectual property rights and unfair economic practices by levying punitive tariffs, by putting up sanctions, restricting access, basically interrupting what I call the global flow of goods and services. So how do you deal with these issues? Someone has to basically look at the issue and ask who's right, who's wrong. Should we change the global rules? And that means essentially working with global institutions. It could be the World Trade Organization, but the U.S. is not particularly strong in backing the WTO. It means working with the IMF and the World Bank or UNIDO, or it means developing another new framework for dealing with these tensions. So you need to strengthen what I call international rules and guidelines and international agencies. And Europe is more supportive of that kind of approach. America has been, especially under Trump, much more of a go-it-alone approach. Now, Biden's indicated a willingness to work with multilateral ideas and concepts and frameworks. But in fact, the leadership for this probably needs to come from Europe rather than from the United States.
Our final 30 seconds. Is Europe ready to take on such a role? They have so many cross currents right now. What is your measure?
Well, the last 10 years, they weren't. They were dealing with Brexit. They're dealing with internal issues, leadership flows. Germany played a big role economically in strengthening Europe's links with China. But Merkel's now retiring. You have a new successor. Macron is becoming what I'm seeing as one of the leaders. But he has his own issues, and he has tensions with the U.S. because of the submarine and Australian issues. And then England has left the EU. So you have issues about whether or not Europe can come out with a consensus and whether or not there will be strong leaders who can actually move Europe in a particular direction. And many European leaders have actually talked about forging some kind of a China policy, which is perhaps more constructive, but also compatible with U.S. values. So as you mentioned, it has not been able to step up to the plate and take that leadership role. And the question now is, can they do so in the future?
Dr. Yukon Wong, Senior Fellow at the Carnegie Asia Program. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.